15 past 2:15 and having at least three members in the room, we will start the meeting. I will note that we're not calling it to order until we have a quorum, but we are acting as if we called it to order, so we'll continue. Right. I would not want to be criticized by my good friend, Representative Torkelson. So, let's go. So we're starting with public television, and Bill Straczynski is here to give us the history and budget overview of public television.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be back before the Legacy Committee. My name is Bill Straczynski, and I represent the Friends of Public Television. Diane Steinbach also is here today, the producer of Minnesota Originals, as well as Les Heen, who's the Chief Executive Officer at Pioneer Public Television, who handled the bulk of the testimony. I just want to thank the committee for its past support. And we've come a long ways in the years when this was kind of a concept, to create the Legacy Fund and to do good things and good work with it. So, again, we appreciate your opportunity to be here and begin into our budget presentation. So, who's going to start?
I'll start. And again, for the record, my name is Les Heen. I'm the General Manager of Pioneer Public Television. I'd like to thank the members of the legislature and this committee for their interest in this issue and also for the funds we've received over the past few years to produce legacy programs. The Minnesota Public Television Association, a quick word about the stations, where we are and what we do. We are all independent community licensed stations. With our own independent boards, and we my station operates out of Appleton with towers near Worthington and Fergus Falls, but also includes Lakeland Public Television, which is Bemidji Brainerd, WDSE, which is Duluth, with transmitters on the Iron Range, and also Prairie Public Television, which has transmitters near Moorhead and Crookston, and then also KSMQ in Austin, Minnesota, and Twin Cities Public Television, and Diane Steinbach is here, as we know, from Twin Cities Public Television. So it's six stations, all working independently, but we all share programs, and we have really appreciated the opportunity to share the stories of arts and history throughout the state. One of the ways that we believe that we've done that well over the last few years is we've done it through community input. All of us have community advisory committees, and we ask viewers for input. We sit down with our community advisory committees and ask them, what sort of stories should we tell? What sort of stories would you like us to tell about our area? And we've been doing that since the start. We've developed programs that many of us, we emphasize a series. We all have sort of a signature series that we do. In our case, it's a show called Postcards with TPT. It's Minnesota Original. And we all have series that run every week that showcase arts and history of Minnesota, plus special projects, documentaries. And we have a reel in a few moments that will give you a sense of that. We've also been accountable and transparent in what we do. And we also put our programs online. I think sometimes when you appropriate funds for something, you kind of wonder, is it going to last? Where is it going to be? And with all of the programs that we produce in public television, we have them online. And we've been doing that since we started. So there are now years' worth of documentaries and performance programs and specials about artists online for anyone in Minnesota to watch anytime. And I should say we've also put together a special website for that that's relatively new. And the address for that is mptalegacymedia.org. That's mptalegacymedia.org. So that's an overview of what we do. And I know that I have a clip here that, if this works correctly, should... If you watch the screens, this should be ready to go.
Okay. Let's just see. In a minute, we noted we have a quorum now, so we're officially called the meeting to order.
Okay. And with that, I will hit the button.
The Minnesota Public Television Association introduced audiences to more than 4,000 local artists and arts organizations, sharing hundreds of stories about our state's culture in 2011 and 2012. The Legacy Amendment has given public television in Minnesota an unprecedented opportunity to capture, showcase, preserve, and share the depth of our creative community and the history of our state with audiences here and across America. The six stations of the MPTA produce unique local programs, including weekly arts and cultural series, performance specials, and history documentaries. In all of our programs, we are committed to presenting artists from diverse cultural, ethnic, and underrepresented communities. 80% of Minnesota Original programs produced in 2011 and 2012 featured diverse artists and content.
Legacy-funded television programs are vital to artists of all backgrounds, especially diverse artists and artists from diverse communities. We share our stories about our work and our process, and we benefit greatly from the statewide exposure.
Minnesota Public Television broadcast more than 3,000 hours of legacy programming. Many of these programs make their way into Minnesota classrooms, along with accompanying educational materials.
Legacy-funded public television programs are essential to me as a teacher because they provide me access to artists that I normally wouldn't have in my classroom.
And these programs go online, where it's not only students and teachers watching them. We've logged more than 1.6 million page views on public television websites. 300 hours of legacy content is streamed online, an archive easy to share on the web and through social media platforms. Legacy funding has made it possible for the stations to employ nearly 500 full-time and freelance workers, providing new jobs in our communities. And public television in Minnesota is opening the doors to theaters, museums, galleries, and studios, and to other local businesses that benefit from their association with the arts. More than 80% of Minnesotans surveyed say they are spending money in the arts and contributing to their local economies because they learned about arts events and the work of local artists from public television. In the next biennium, we seek legacy amendment support to continue the important work now underway, work that has made a difference in and for the arts in our state. In addition to our current core work, the MPTA is proposing three new initiatives to expand the reach of Minnesota arts. First, the MPTA proposes a new investment in arts education, partnering with PBS Learning Media, a digital media platform designed to creatively engage students and teachers. We propose to make Minnesota arts and Minnesota artists available to every teacher in every school at no cost. Second, MPTA proposes to expand the creation and distribution of Minnesota arts programming for audiences across America. Capitalizing on the success of our production of Guthrie Theater's HMS Pinafore for PBS. That met with rave national reviews. Finally, the MPTA proposes to develop a new kind of arts community engagement in Minnesota, giving our local communities around the state opportunities to share their own stories and be even more involved in capturing, sharing, and preserving our state's arts and cultural legacy. The Minnesotans who are the MPTA are proud of the work done to date, excited by the prospect of the work ahead, and grateful to those forward-thinking Minnesotans who make this work possible. Together, we are creating an archive of our arts, culture, and history that will serve our state for decades to come.
Thank you all. I'm Diane Steinbach, and I am Director of Arts and Cultural Media at Twin Cities Public Television. And I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair, and Legacy Committee members for all that you've done to support our work so far with the Legacy Amendment. But I'd like to start by talking about the future of MPTA legacy funding, and that is continuing our work, which you have so generously funded the last two biennia, and taking it to the next level, beyond broadcast, beyond our websites, beyond the lesson guides that now accompany all of our video segments on our websites. I'm referring to a new body of work that I have a great deal of personal passion for, and that's arts education. The six stations of the MPTA have created a vast archive of video segments that showcase, preserve, and share our Minnesota assets, the arts, the cultures, and the heritage of Minnesota. That next step is to provide teachers and student learners in Minnesota a free, online, accessible digital toolkit known as PBS Learning Media. It's a new and important platform that can make digital legacy content directly available to all educators in order to drive student achievement. The site currently has more than 850,000 users, and I'm told about 20,000 assets. There is, however, a real need for arts content. Only about 9% of the classroom assets currently available on PBS Learning Media is arts-related content. And whether an educator is teaching science, math, language arts, or history, arts-related content is another tool for reaching students across curricula. MPTA legacy programs are also uniquely positioned by design because they feature the many diverse cultures living here in Minnesota. Arts content is a way for everyone to learn about cultures different from their own. Different and yet appealing, an appealing vehicle for the common human need to express oneself, whether through writing, spoken word, music, or singing in a choir. The arts provide a safe place for self-expression, hard work, discipline, problem-solving, team-building, and developing self-confidence. Together, we have an opportunity here to make to be a major supplier of Minnesota arts content to a national educational resource. Inclusion in PBS digital learning media would provide both teachers and students a trusted one-stop shop for content and pedagogy that is classroom-ready. As a digital content contributor to PBS Learning Media, the Minnesota Public Television Association will join a distinguished group, a list of publicly funded contributors to this online education resource source such as NASA, the Library of Congress, and the National Historic Archives. We're asking for additional funding to support to be able to tag and meta-tag all of our legacy assets, cross-reference them to state teaching standards, and to create online professional development tools for utilizing the legacy arts assets in classrooms across the state and around the nation. In short, a permanent online educational legacy. Our second initiative is sharing Minnesota with the nation. For decades, Twin Cities Public Television has been a major producer of national programming for PBS. And in 2011, as we mentioned in our reel, legacy funding was partially responsible for the television project of the Guthrie Theater's production of HMS Pinafore, and a short video about the Twin Cities art scene that followed, and that all was broadcast as part of PBS's Arts Festival series. In a recent article in the LA Times, the former chair of the Orange County, California Republican Party, and also a board member of PBS's Southern California, said, when Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore was taped at the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis, it played to a sold-out crowd. However, more than 2.1 million Americans had front row seats watching it on PBS. Had PBS viewers purchased tickets, the theater would have been sold out 1,900 times. TPT wishes to continue that tradition of sharing Minnesota artists and arts organizations with the nation by creating a program fund to provide the critical seed funding needed to leverage additional production dollars within the community from PBS and with national donors as well. The new National Production Fund will showcase Minnesota's creative community and share it with the nation. And finally, the last initiative is one that each MPTA station would like to host, be able to host outreach events in each of the six MPTA communities around the state, sharing our public online resources and reporting back to Minnesotans about the value their legacy amendment investment is delivering. And I would be happy to review the three initiatives or answer any questions you might have about them.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. A question regarding the Gilbert and Sullivan's Penfold. Since it played on TPT, public television, all over the country, and then, of course, they raise funds through donations, right. Was there any royalties that were dividends that resulted from that being broadcast in public television all over the country?
For the actors and actresses?
Well,
there are certainly rights payments and equity payments that get made to the performers.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
No, well, not necessarily to the actors and actresses, uh-huh. but to back to the legacy or back to the Guthrie or back to the state of Minnesota.
No, it's all cash out. In terms of the production funding that happens, we were able to raise it with some individual donors, some PBS money, and then some legacy money paid for the total cost of production. So it was broadcast here, broadcast nationally, but I don't...
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I can also share with you on that. It's free to the viewing public. Public television is free for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so on this particular initiative, I think legacy funds were around 200,000 plus were made available for that production. It was significantly more than that. It was about $800,000, $900,000 to distribute it nationally. Money came into Minnesota, Twin Cities Public Television, and the Guthrie to make all of that happen. So we brought money into it, but and certainly you pay royalties for music and those kinds of things out as well. But basically, there's no revenue that came in to individual stations or benefactors that way other than to produce the programming. So we bring money, revenue in from other sources on this national production model to export Minnesota nationally, which is quite a phenomenal, very, very well-received benefit.
Representative, okay?
Well, yes, maybe I didn't state the question or didn't hear the answer correctly. No, I understand public television is free, but they also derive some of their funds through donations, correct?
Individual stations, yes, have pledge drives, so we get some funding that way, but all of the rest is raised through donations or grants.
Madam Chair, yeah. So just a thought process. As an artist, if I had my work out there on public television and they were raising money through my artwork, I would like to get some of that funds back for the program.
Sure.
So I would think that if a play that was produced and paid for in Minnesota by donations and tax dollars, and since it's being shown on public television all over the country as an opportunity to raise money publicly through donations, then that program which helped raise funds through donations should reap some of the benefits so they can use that funds for further productions. Do you understand?
We don't receive any funding back from broadcasting. They're free offers to PBS, although PBS did invest some funding in the... that went toward the cost of the production. And then there was $75,000 of legacy money that went into the production cost. But because we're not for profit, everything gets plowed back into the production cost to produce the programs. And so in that production budget is also all the payments to the artists for their performance. And there isn't a realization of profit back to either PBS or to the producing station, and quite a lot of it is the breadth of the promotion that you get.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I'll try one more time too. It's interesting to note that program wasn't pledged. You know, we do our pledge breaks once a year. Every station does it at the same time to raise revenue for station operations. Mm-hmm. That revenue pays for a small part of the station operations. We rely on other sources of revenue, but program like the HMS Pinafore was not part of a pledge break that would generate revenues to the station. Most of the revenues to the station, frankly, comes from sources. Membership is a big part of it. The rest of the revenues come from foundations, philanthropic grants, and those kinds of things. So it's not as if it can do a direct correlation to revenues coming back into individual stations. Particularly a program like that was aired by 95% of the public television stations around the country. So it was made available to an audience of 90 million people, essentially. But see what you're saying. That's an interesting concept, though. I think it's one to take a little bit of a look at.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And You know, I probably have missed it, but I'm still looking to see Mr. Straczynski at a pledge drive.
I'm sure this is what I'm doing right here. In front of this committee. After 32 years, actually, public television.
But then just, you know, final clarification. If you send programming to a PBS station in Los Angeles that has been produced here, they don't send anything back for the...
Madam Chair, Representative Ertl, that's correct. This is exactly correct. And I should share something Diane didn't say either, nor Mr. Heen, but, you know, legacy programming on public television has received how many Emmy nominations?
There have been, I'm not sure, I don't have it committed to memory.
Over 40
it's
some,
on the one sheet
over
that's 40 in your
some
packet.
Nominations, yeah. Legacy programming, have for Emmys, and received, mm-hmm. actually received, it's probably on the handout sheet mm-hmm. there, but it's a significant number. So this is the good work that we've done in collaboration with your communities throughout the state. And legacy programming is aired and distributed statewide. It's six independent public television stations interconnected using the state's digital backbone system. So we distribute our programming. It goes on. It's available to everybody. And we know 2.6 million people a week watch public television.
Madam Chair.
Minnesota.
Thank you. Mr. Straczynski, whoever you mentioned Emmy Award winning program, I was just wondering, I think it was last October or something, there was maybe I have the wrong month, but Postcards had an episode featuring a Central Minnesota author in many of the segments. And I was just, did that get nominated for an Emmy or anything? Anyone know?
Well, the question is, did it result in any book sales, and did we get any return from those book sales? Is the what we're really following Representative McDonald's approach?
Madam Chair and Representative Ertl, the season for nominations for Emmys. That's not here. The deadline's in May, so we wouldn't know about an Emmy till next fall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope no one holds their breath on that one. But any more?
If we could, if we pass the sports book bill, we could take book on it here.
Don't bet on it either. But Madam Chair, one more serious note. You know, we have in the last couple of bienniums appropriated money to TPT and public television, and frankly, I think they've been doing a pretty good job with it. Last summer, with the sesquicentennial of the Civil War and the U.S. Dakota War going on, I know that there's a lot of activity. We one of the things that we did last session was to appropriate money for a documentary on the Civil War and Dakota War, and I know that they're working on it. That'll be out, I think, was it this fall, November, maybe December, but I was witnessed firsthand the work being done on this, and I think that it's money well spent, and hopefully we'll serve us well into the future in terms of furthering education, understanding, and in the case of the U.S. Dakota War, healing because of what happened in 1862. So thank you for that. And maybe you can clarify a little bit on the status of the documentary that's being worked on and when that will be released.
Sure thing. Madam Chair and Representative Ertl, thank you very much for mentioning that. It's been a good year and a half of shooting and documenting all of the things that have gone on this year as part of the sesquicentennial of the Dakota War, and much has been learned, and we hope a good deal of reconciliation will occur. The program is winding up, or at least the production part of the 2 hours of programming is winding up now. They're shooting some interviews with both Civil War experts and also Dakota War experts, many of them authors, and we're shooting for a November broadcast, trying to bridge the two sesquicentennial years of both the Civil War and the Dakota War. And so it's also Native American History Month, and it's a terrific month for television viewership around the state. So all things considered, we thought that would be an excellent time, and also it's during the school year.
So. Okay. Was that legacy funding, or was that general fund funding?
Legacy funding. Okay. Yeah, completely.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And Madam Chair, last, I just would like to draw your attention. In your packets, there should be a one-page handout that talks about all the things legacy accomplished, just different colors, different statements. That's it. On the other side is some information about legacy, what we've accomplished last year. It's pretty, we're really excited about that. And then our legacy ask is on the back side, but the front page, it's just phenomenal what's happening, and it's just fun to be a part of all of this. Again, thank you.
There's one involvement I would like, and I don't know if it should be done with the special appropriation or even where it should come from, but I would like to get public television and maybe the other Amperes and NPR involved in, is filming and documenting some of the other legacy projects that are being done, not just in arts, but in environment and so forth. I did hear there was some conversation with some program in DNR, and DNR decided they had the ability to do it themselves, and I understand it was not very well done. And so, I don't remember all the particulars, and I don't remember where the proposal came from, and so forth. But you know, I wondered if there's something we could write in that would specifically give funding, you know, someplace to look and select some. Obviously, we don't want to follow the awful lot of legacy projects, so we don't want to follow every one of them, but right. You know, it seems to me if the people who do this kind of stuff professionally looked at it and made some judgment as to what would be likely to do it, it would be you know to get a film record of it in some sense.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that's an excellent point. I think what happens certainly in this committee, you're familiar with what public television does, and many members of the legislature are. But there's lots of other legacy-funded initiatives going on in the environment, clean waters area, whatever. It's not that they just don't think about public television. I'll give you an example. Prairie restoration funds are being spent to do restore prairies. Well, public television could play a role, perhaps, with those people documenting how to restore a prairie, track it from its beginning where you start, raw material, and then the finished product years from now, and archive it. And it's available online free for anybody that wants to access it. They just don't think about us. I know we've got information regarding waters and rivers that have been cleaned up from the start to finish over 10 years. Yeah. So I think there's an opportunity there. They just don't think of us, and it'd be nice if they would. I think it would help them out a lot.
My invitation to you, and probably to repeat it also to them, whoever that expansive then is to try and start thinking of that line. So I'd like to try and think of the kinds of things that could cross-cut. The example I always give, and whenever something new comes, I can add it to it, is that I always give the thing I would like most is a trail that connects two trail systems, that connects some wildlife preserves that have species that we need to interchange, that goes alongside a river with a buffer zone purifying the water into the river, and now we should, and also gets to a historic site, and now we can say, and it's all filmed by public television.
Right.
So
we would love to do that, Madam Chair, and I think we've had a good deal of background and history in working with through our Minnesota Channel and Minnesota Collaborative. There have been a number of legacy-funded projects that have been about the environment and many other topics that are of importance to communities around the state. Working with our partners, like the Department of Natural Resources and other institutions, nonprofit institutions, to help them make television programs that are about their projects and legacy funding. So we could certainly explore that and would love to, because we are already doing it in many cases.
Okay. Yeah. And the answer is, do we need some special language to encourage that or something like that? That's not to be answered now, but just to be thought about before you put the full bill together. Mm-hmm. Representative Hausman.
And Madam Chair, I actually think that's exactly what all those communities around the state are trying to do. They always come in and talk about exactly all of those connections and how everything leads to something else, but that's not my question. I wanted to go back to Representative McDonald's question, because it almost sounded like you were answering on a local level, and I think he was asking something else. And what I heard him saying is, not your station, all those other stations, you said it was played all over the country. they solicit contributions to their station based on their programming. And so what he's saying is, so they don't pay anything. So what I'm hearing inferred then is all programming would be free to all stations. You don't have to pay for any, which I'm assuming is not true. So
it's one of the great mysteries of PBS, Madam Chair and Representative. We do not, when we offer to PBS and PBS agrees to take a program, there is no fee paid back to us, and stations are able to run it. PBS sanctions it and offers a program and feeds it to the nation. It's offered as a free offer, it's called. So there is no exchange of money or fee for running the program. It's we have to raise, the producing station raises all of the funding to cover the production costs, and then it's offered, and PBS has the right to accept or reject any program that any station in the nation offers. We've had a good track record with them, at least Twin Cities Public Television has had a good track record with PBS, and so we have relationships there, and they're inclined to accept our programming offers. But there is no exchange of money in any way by the stations. They don't, the programs that we, they aren't necessarily pledge programs. We have produced pledge programs for them in the past.
So, Madam Chair, just to follow up then, so when, if ever, do you have to pay for programming money?
Well, we pay a fee for programming to belong. We pay dues to PBS to belong and be able to get all of the programs that they offer. And we also pay dues to some other distribution it's called American Public Television and a few others. So that's where the station's program directors pay, and it's assessed based on your market size and some other things. So we pay to belong to PBS. They do not necessarily run anything we produce. It goes through their own selection process.
Representative, thank you, Madam Chair. excuse me. I was just looking at the sheet, and you have a little pie here on diversity.
Yes.
And it says 80% of Minnesota original programs produced. Now, is this pie representing that 80%?
The pie is representing the percentage, just the percentage of the diverse communities that we've had represented on Minnesota Original. And it's not reflective of the entire MPTA. We just took it from, we just took one program and counted up all of the programs and how many artists, how many diverse people were in each segment of each program for the last year. We've done that each year in our annual report.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair? I guess my question was, what I was going to get to is that this pie is representing the 80% that you're talking about?
Yes.
And then is this with all your funding or just the legacy money?
Just the legacy money. We only have legacy money for Minnesota Original.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Booth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you very much for coming and telling your story. It's I think you've really been great stewards of the money that have come from the legacy, and thank you for that. And I really enjoyed personally the little artist pieces that you do, and it's funny how they captivate you. You start watching one, and you know they're fairly short, so I mean that tells a little bit about me. So they're you know, they catch you, and then you start another one. And you think, well, I'm going to go do this, and next, you know, they sit through that one, and then you go through, you know, and so they kind of grab you. And I don't know if you ever put those on a DVD or something. I hope you'd consider just giving a few of those to members here, you know. With, no, I mean just so they could view them and just kind of, if they haven't had an opportunity to see it, because it's quite amazing. And it's funny because it catches you, and it's not necessarily something that you have a least bit, I mean, like interest or knowledge of. And then next thing you know, the stories are so captivating that you know, they really grab you. So it's neat. I really enjoy that.
Chair, Representative, I think that's true, and that was our intent when we first created all the programs around the state, is that most people are not, don't encounter artists and their work in the creative community here in Minnesota, and these are really fascinating people with terrific ideas doing great work all around our state, and so we're just grateful to be able to bring them to you because we know about them, and I think it's an important way of, as I said earlier with the education piece, of approaching young people especially who are interested in the arts at an early age, and being able to teach other subjects through the arts because we've already got their attention. So.
Thank you. Yes. And then just kind of, you know, the last couple of years I had an opportunity. I was on this committee in the beginning, but then, you know, you kind of look at each piece of the pie, and I just want to support the comments of Chair Kahn, because the last 2 years I was on Lazard Sams, and often you know it's 33%, and they're doing these projects and whatnot, but until you hear the testimony from the folks that come in and present it, you know, so you understand that. But as members, sometimes we don't know what those, you know, each line item is on a, you know, this $1.4 million for this prairie restoration, like Mr. that Bill was talking about. But if you could do what you're talking about, would just be wonderful. And I think it would actually be helpful to, in that case, like Lazard Sams, to have their story told and out there. I mean, the same goes with the clean water component and the mm-hmm. parks and trails, and we could go up to Representative Ward's district and see where they're, you know, to ride the red or something. But I just had a final comment. I was wondering if Representative Erdahl, if he had a stunt author double or something when he was doing his video.
Representative Erdahl, you can't respond. You don't have to.
I probably shouldn't, Madam Chair. But no double was needed. It was pretty safe work. You maybe could send that episode out to these folks, and they could firsthand see that a double was not needed.
That's true.
Oh.
And it's also available on pioneer.org. You could go to our website, and it was the first episode of this season. So
okay, we'll send that as a link. We'll send that as a link to everybody with as a homework assignment. We'll take the Representative Murphy homework assignment approach. I think kind of the point we're making is that rather than just sending a camera along with every project that we're funding, we'd like somebody, we'd like some kind of judgment made by somebody who supposedly has the appropriate production and artistic judgment to pull out a few of these, you know, maybe just not specify them, but do them after. I think that would be helpful, you know, not only to the concept of leaving a legacy, but to the state legislators and so forth.
Well, Madam Chair, if you're trying to educate the public, we don't know about aquatic invasive species, for example, but we know how to do a documentary about that to educate the public.
Yes.
We don't know how to restore a prairie, but we know how to do a documentary, which explains to people how to, that's what we do, and we do it well.
That's exactly the point I was trying to make.
Thank you so much for the time, and thank you for all of your support.
Okay. Representative McDowell.
Madam Chair, thank you. I hate to do a shameless plug like Representative Erdahl, but if you need to talk to me, I'm a filmmaker, I do that. But seriously, Ms. Steinbeck, you said something very provocative and so true. You said that approaching the arts at a very early age, it's a very good way to catch them while they're young. With that said, the question is, at our local county fairs all over the state of Minnesota, the young 4-H'ers are involved in great many things, not only agriculture, but arts, including weaving and painting and modeling and photography and video. What amount of funds, if any, from the legacy help culture and foster arts in our county fairs all over the state of Minnesota?
Representative Torkelson is the expert on that. $2.2 million sticks in my mind, but do you remember Representative Torkelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not remember the exact number,
okay.
But there is a grant.
Ms. Roberts
program.
Is looking it up for
excellent.
Us. Erdahl, it was your committee. I wasn't around. I don't know anything about it.
Madam Chair, I remember the spreadsheet I'm looking at from the past two sessions show $1.4 million. This is grants to the Department of Agriculture, for arts access to each county, and then $1.4 million for grants for fair facilities and programs. So that's a total of $2.8
million. Okay. Okay, Representative McConnell.
Will that be then the case for this next biennium?
Well, Representative McDonald, we're putting a bill together. We haven't made those decisions yet.
Oh, can I submit a suggestion?
Well, yes, you go through the process, but we're not. You know, you're a member of the committee. You don't even have to.
Actually, it's in the books right now. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Verdal.
Thank you, and I think we should recognize that Representative Torkelson was nearly an award-winning legislator for his work on county fairs.
Madam Chair, I have to clarify this for the record that the past chair of the committee did receive an award from the County Fair Association for his hard work on the bill, even though the chief author of the bill was left in the sawdust.
The chief author of the project was left in the...
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that clarification.
Okay. Okay. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, were you invited to attend?
Free corn dog.
The award ceremony, no. I do attend my county fair every chance I get, however.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Erdahl, is that?
That's true. They must have made a mistake. I was invited, but... they must have made a mistake on Representative Torkelson.
Okay. I think we're finished. Any other comments or suggestions or questions?
Thank you so much, ma'am.
Thank you. And we will send out the link to all members. Okay. Next on our program is History and Budget Overview from Ampeers. Yeah. Don't worry. Okay, we have two people listed, Tamuta Linay and Joel Glazer. Who is going first? And I apologize for butchering names if I did.
Not a problem, Madam Chair. If with your permission, I will begin.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joel Glazer. I am the executive director of AMPERS, the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations, and I am joined by recording artist and actress Tamatha Linay. We'll hear from Ms. Linay in just a moment. We'd like to begin, first of all, by thanking you for having us here today and thanking you for your continued support. AMPERS, which provides diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, is made up of 15 independent, truly local community radio stations throughout Minnesota. We are not affiliated with, nor do we receive funding from Minnesota Public Television or Minnesota Public Radio. The AMPERS stations primarily serve rural and minority communities, not served through traditional media. 14 of the 15 radio stations qualify for state funding. KUMM in Morris does not because of its size. Since the last biennium, we actually have three new radio stations. They are not only new to the AMPERS group, they are new to Minnesota. All three are affiliated with Native American communities in northern Minnesota. AMPERS is a radio association, not a radio network. Minnesota Public Radio is a radio network. That means if you can be in Grand Marais and Winona at the exact same time, you'll be hearing the exact same programming. The AMPERS stations are individually programmed by and for their local communities. As you'll see in our coverage map, we have local community stations as far north as Grand Marais and Deep River Falls, down to Winona, Mankato, and Austin. Each AMPERS station is licensed to either a college, school, or university, or licensed directly to the community that it serves. Because Minnesota Public Radio and AMPERS are both public radio stations, understandably there's a fair amount of confusion. But the two do serve very different audiences. The AMPERS stations are smaller community radio stations, and honestly, we don't really view Minnesota Public Radio as competitors. They're serving the masses. We're serving the smaller communities, the rural communities on a grassroots level. In FY12, collectively, the AMPERS stations created more than 1,000 legacy programs, brought a variety of music, arts, nature, history, and cultural projects. Here's a brief look at just a few of those projects.
In 2012, AMPERS and its member stations, with help of legacy funding, created more than 1,000 programs providing Minnesota communities access to the arts, culture, and history. More than 18,000 people attended live concerts and events that AMPERS stations helped bring to Minnesotans. 233 students worked on legacy projects, and legacy funding helped to pay more than 200 Minnesota artists and musicians. In Minneapolis, KBEM Jazz 88 highlights youth jazz. And KFAI's 10,000 Fresh Voices showcased the Urban Spectrum Theater Company.
I feel like the great thing about community theater is that it gives a voice to people who don't normally have an outlet for a creative voice.
KAXE in Grand Rapids made sure that bits of Minnesota history aren't forgotten.
When did electricity come in?
In 1945, October 30th, 1945. I remember the day real well. Yeah.
Winona's KQAL talked about the art of herbalism with Bonnie Krakow.
We were totally self-sufficient on the farm. We did our own beef, chickens, eggs, grew our own vegetables, fruit. So I'm in herbal medicine? Totally.
The Twin Cities KUOM, Radio K, provides a unique look at culture.
From our studios at KUOM, on the west bank of the University of Minnesota campus, this is Culture Q, the art show that rocks.
And Duluth's KUMD introduced us to the beauty of Minnesota through the eye of a camera lens.
Minnesota is a beautiful area, and there's a real intimate beauty to it. I think one of the nicest hikes is Oberg Mountain near Tofty.
AMPERS produced a 60-minute documentary, as well as 20 mini-documentaries about the 1862 Dakota War.
First, the Dakota people once had all of Minnesota. Then they fought a war with the Ojibwe, and they basically lost half of it.
Kimberly Elise.
Minneapolis's KMLJ kept us up to date with Minnesota's movers and shakers.
Film and television actress.
While KSRQ, Pioneer 90.1 in Thief River Falls, kept us grounded with the music of our heritage. KMSU in Mankato continued its radio novellas, providing Latin radio dramas.
María Lidia se alegra que Ricardo Daniel le dé explicaciones y le pida perdón.
And KVSC in St. Cloud played host to musicians and their insights during the Weekend of Music.
Nevertheless, songwriting is something that I've always had to make time for.
AMPERS continued its educational yet entertaining look at history with MN90, Minnesota History in 90 Seconds.
Residents of Virginia, Minnesota visited the Socialist Opera House to take in an evening of Finnish folk music like this.
And WTIP in Grand Marais demonstrated its ongoing commitment to the next generation, providing hands-on experience for youth and radio.
This one, then what?
Those two cards right there.
One after each other and the winds above.
AMPERS stations throughout the state provide programming that is uniquely Minnesota while preserving culture, history, and heritage. Programming that can't be found anywhere else with help from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
The legacy funds are supposed to be used to expose more Minnesotans of all ages, ethnicities, to arts, culture, and heritage. Increase exposure for Minnesota artists and showcase their work. Ideally, increase their earning potential. All of you should have received a digital copy of our legacy legislative report. Rather than boring you with all of the details, although if you have insomnia, pick it up, you'll be fine. I've asked recording artist Tamatha Lene to join us today to tell us firsthand how she benefited from an AMPERS legacy project.
Is Madam, oh yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tamatha Lene. And as Mr. Glazer mentioned, I am a recording artist, actress, and playwright. I was born and raised in Minneapolis. This past year, KMOJ featured my work as part of their Minnesota Music Makers series. And unlike a typical radio interview that's crammed into 3 to 5 minutes, they dedicated a 30-minute segment solely to me. They took the time to talk about my background and what inspired me while also giving me time to talk about and promote my current projects. This gave the listeners a unique chance to connect with me as a person and not just as an artist. And with this stronger personal connection, I saw an increase in my fan base. There was a buzz created, and I saw an increase in my YouTube views, more digital downloads of my work, and more followers on Facebook. And I received more requests to perform. There is no doubt in my mind that the opportunity to participate in this KMOJ program helped me to reach a much broader audience. typically I perform at theater venues like the Ordway, the Guthrie. Actually, I was a part of HMS Pinafore and benefited from the TPT and PBS production of that, so that was fun to see. And Chanhassen also, I perform there, and they all have very specific demographics. But with Minnesota Music Makers, I was able to reach a completely new demographic, including some lower-income listeners who otherwise may not have heard of me. I've been blessed to perform all around the world, from Los Angeles to Tokyo to London, and talking to artists from other places has helped me to appreciate how rich the opportunities are for artists here in my home state of Minnesota. The voters here know how important it is to support the arts, and because of this, they decided to take action. They voted to make a long-term financial investment in programs that support the diverse community of artists here in Minnesota, and I thank them and you for that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as I briefly outline our request for the next biennium, please keep in mind that we have 14 different stations that will literally be doing hundreds of programs. I'll be providing you with the big picture, but rest assured, literally every legacy dollar we spend is explicitly accounted for in the work plans that we provide the Department of Administration. The Department of Administration must approve the work before we begin any project. Legacy dollars are not spent on general operating expenses. The Department of Administration, the stations, and AMPRS all monitor that. In fact, we have even created a compliance committee to ensure every dime is spent appropriately. The largest portion of funding goes towards the creation and distribution of legacy programs that we broadcast. It funds programs like Minnesota Music Makers, which we just heard about. Programs like Mini Culture, a 30-minute documentary featuring Minnesota poets, dancers, and musicians. The Great Northern Radio Show, a newly created two-hour variety show performed in front of live audiences. And Moments in Time, a biweekly 3 to 5 minute feature of historical reflections about the North Shore, which received the Associated Press's First Place Award in the Features category. It was one of two First Place Awards from the Associated Press that the station received for its legacy programming. In FY12, the stations collaborated on several statewide projects like MN90, Minnesota History in 90 Seconds. It was incredibly successful. Listeners learned that the oldest human remains in North America were found in Otter Tail County, and that a Minnesota engineer invented the retractable seatbelt. Minnesota Native News delivered the only weekly radio newscast exclusively dedicated to news and information from the state's Native American communities. Unfortunately, we had to pull the plug on those projects in FY13. State grant policies prevent grant recipients from pooling their funding for projects like this. So we are asking that you help us to fix this by appropriating funds directly to AMPRS so that we can get these projects back on the air and into your communities. The stations can use their funds for projects in their local communities, and AMPRS can use the funding for projects like MN90 and Minnesota Native News. The legacy program that we create enriches the lives of Minnesotans and put taxpayer dollars back into the economy. In last fiscal year, legacy funds helped to pay more than 200 Minnesota artists and more than 57 contractors. The funding also helped to pay 33 part-time employees and 27 full-time employees, and more than 200 students worked on legacy programming. Madam Chair, you had talked about documenting the legacy projects that are taking place. I can tell you that we are very open to that. As TPT mentioned, they are as well. In fact, we have already done that to some degree. The initial launch of MN90 was in collaboration with the Minnesota Historical Society. We are very open to collaborating with other legacy agencies and other legacy recipients to document their work and share it with Minnesotans. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we are doing exactly what the taxpayers voted to approve. We are providing art and culture to Minnesotans in a fun, entertaining, interesting, and educational manner. We'd like to ask that you allocate $4,460,000 to AMPRS and its member stations for the next biennium. It's an investment in art, an investment in culture, and an investment in jobs for Minnesotans. thank you for your consideration.
Okay. I did note your comment that you were the only ones who were required to have a competitive grant. Ms. Roberts, Representative Erdahl, there was another two programs that was another one.
Madam Chair, and I was going to reference this myself. I don't know how you are categorizing two legacy grant recipients. The way that the money was appropriated, for example, to the Arts Board, that's a competitive grant process to all of their recipients, or most of them. The Historical Society, the money that we appropriated to them, to their grant process, was a competitive grant process. In terms of the total monies that were given out under this category, I'm sure that over half of it was out in a competitive grant process. Now, I understand that MPR and AMPRS, I believe, had to compete under a competitive grant process. And I would like you to give me the breakdown. Through the Department of Administration, we worked this. And I'd like the breakdown as to how much MPR and how much AMPRS received, because we don't have that right here right now, and I don't remember. So those numbers, and I'll just stop at that and then continue after you respond.
Okay. And Mr. Hansen, did you want to put?
Madam Chair, I'm Tom Hansen with the firm Winthrop & Weinstein, and I lobby for AMPRS. To Representative Erdahl, I think that AMPRS and MPR were the only ones to go through the RFP process and fill out the formal applications and have that sort of a process. Unless I'm mistaken, I don't think anyone else had to do that.
Madam Chair and Mr. Hansen, it just, I guess, depends on your definition of the process of competitive grants. I mean, a lot of the money that we did was through the competitive grants process. The Humanities Center, for example, with civic education, had a competitive grants process for those that applied for those funds. And so there were several other examples. I mean, it's really not that big a thing, but I just want folks to understand that it wasn't quite as selective as this might sound in terms of how we funded this money.
Well, Madam Chair, I understand that. Another way to, I think we're saying the same thing.
Probably
we are. In the legacy bill last time, the others got a direct appropriation. Yeah, and AMPRS and MPR, and this is maybe how we should have said it. The appropriation went to admin, and then we had to apply for it. I think you're saying that everybody, in their own way and different processes, competed, and we acknowledge that.
Yes, Madam Chair and Mr. Hansen, that's essentially right. It just depends on, how you interpret where the competitive grants actually finally came from. But I will say, in a general sense, I've been pleased over the years with the work that AMPRS has done. So I don't have any problem with that. Sometimes to pass a bill, you do what you have to do. And if you want more explanation on that, you can talk to me some other time. But how did it break down? Could you give us, between MPR and AMPRS, what it was?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, the appropriation for 12 and 13 was $5.3 million. Of that, 2.794 went to AMPRS, and then the remainder went to MPR. I don't have that number here.
We'll have it in just a second here.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Glazer.
Representative Erdahl, Madam Chair, if I could also just speak briefly to the comment that you were making as far as the competitive grant process. Part of what we were also trying to draw attention to is that this is a, to some degree, already a competitive process at the legislative level, and you're determining how much money were to go to MPR, how much goes to AMPRS. Part of the challenge that we had as we looked at it, as far as the Department of Administration goes, we were, to our understanding, the only organizations that had to go through a competitive grant process were the museums, the zoos, and prior, and I understand and respect and appreciate what you did do to get the funding through, but prior we did not have, it was a direct appropriation, we did not have a competitive grant process, and unfortunately since these are smaller community radio stations, some of them only having two full-time employees, they not only had to compete against Minnesota Public Radio, they actually had to compete against each other. And that did, it did as a result, as opposed to the stations getting fairly equal amount, some stations ended up getting literally twice as much as some of the other stations. And we're trying to make sure that we're equally representing all stations, regardless of their size.
Representative
Hausman? I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hausman?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to support the point they're making. I mean, I do think this is a legitimate issue you're raising and that we have to think about because being written into the bill is certainly very different. And so I think I just think it's a message we should hear and take seriously and think about as we shape this bill.
Thank you.
Representative
Duff. Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there time for one more question?
Yes. We're doing better than usual.
Mr. Glazer, in your presentation, you had the interview of a World War II veteran or a veteran, or actually it was an interview of a person who was recalling electricity. So as you're aware that there's over close to 900 to 1,000 veterans, World War II veterans, dying per day, so we're losing some valuable time and great resources of the greatest generation. I know in our hometown of Delano, the local group, the movie group, what do you call them? One of our local school groups did a documentary on some of World War II vets. So I'm wondering how many, if any, productions have you done that interviewed some of our great World War II vets, and you're preserving that history?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Budge.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, with 14 radio stations doing literally over 1,000 programs, I don't have that at my tip of my fingers. I'd be more than happy to put a note out to all the stations and follow up with you and get you that exact number. I just can't keep up with all the various, you know, there are some that are hour long, some that are 3 minutes long, but I can certainly get that information for you.
Madam Chair.
So,
thank you. So that is happening. So some of our legacy money is happening to help interview and document the greatest generation. Is that correct?
Honestly, off the top of my head, I don't have an answer to that. I am more than happy to get an exact answer. As I mentioned, I apologize. It's just they are all throughout the state. I don't actually work in one of their offices. Everything goes up to the website, but with the fact that they go back to 1862 up to the current, I am assuming so, but I don't want to assume. I would want to get you a firm answer.
And lastly, Madam Chair, thank you. And then as far as does staff know then in the culture, in the arts and culture, as far as video documentary, has there been any programs done that were a result of legacy funds in documenting our World War II veterans and their accounts?
I'm sure I don't know that off the top of my head, but we've been
seeing me.
Madam Chair, a follow-up question so that I can get the correct answer. Are you talking about any and all veterans or just specifically World War II?
I think World War II is what.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative McDonald, I can tell you that, for example, in the Minnesota Public Television Association, we did a documentary at Pioneer Public Television called Honor Flight. That was an hour-long documentary about southwestern Minnesota veterans, and that was all World War II veterans and their travels to D.C. and then their recollections of the war. So that would be an example of what we did in the previous biennium, and that was an hour-long documentary that's available on our website. I don't know specifically what all the other stations did, but that's an example of what's been done in video that I'm aware of.
Madam Chair, how do we encourage that to happen? I think it's very important, and I'm not alone in this, that we document the Greatest Generation, our World War II veterans, their counts. My father did a documentary on the Carver County veterans through the Lions Club, all funded through the Lions Club, that went out to Washington, and he did a great documentary. But this just reminded me that we have an opportunity through the legacy funds, through the law, to preserve that culture and those stories. And if we're not doing that with the tax dollars in your departments, the radio and television, that I think we're missing an opportunity and we're losing very valuable, precious time. So I don't know what has to be done in this committee to voice the concern that if you're going to receive some grants, you should reach out to those producers or whomever, whatever groups are doing to preserve those memories of our veterans and do it quickly. I'm not sure what the urgency, what has to be done, but I would certainly urge you to do that if it's not being done. And I certainly thank you for the flight, the honor flight that you said. I'm aware of that. What a great documentary that is. But we must start today.
I'm a little nervous about being too prescriptive about when we write our appropriations. But I think there might be some language that we can put in to suggest that this is something that might be a priority in the next few years or something like that. We'll get our very creative drafting people working on it. Thank and I'm sure you will have suggestions. Okay. Mr. Hansen, who won? Anyone? Oh, Representative Freiberg. Let's go.
I have a question for Ms. Lene. Ms. Lene, excuse me, I don't know. Since we've been talking about HMS Pinafore a lot today, it seems like I just thought I'd ask what role you played in it. I did actually see the performance at the Guthrie, or one of them, and it was a great performance of it.
Oh, well, Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. I was one of the sister's cousin's aunts, so I was. so the female grouping where we have beautiful costumes designed by an Italian designer and. Got to wear the bodices and the big skirts, and yeah, so I was a sister cousin aunt.
Cool.
It was a really great production. I was happy to be a part of it. Great experience. Just got a royalty check yesterday from it. Representative Berto asked about that. I was like, well, the artists are getting royalty checks.
Okay.
I am.
Okay.
So.
Terrific. Okay. Yeah. I saw it too, and it was terrific.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
One more point to Representative McDonald's question. In our last committee hearing, Representative Murphy's finance, the Humanity Center is talking about doing a Voices of the Veterans, and I had already put in my notes to follow up with the Executive Director David O'Fallon to talk about a collaboration on that project. So,
okay. Any other questions from members of the committee? Any public comment from any members of the audience? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming. We really appreciate what you do. Okay, we should note that our page today, Arlen, is very close to his 80th birthday. So we thank him for his extended service. Okay, meeting adjourned.